Okay. Oh, wow. Let's see. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Vicky D from Santa Maria. Yay. Give me a hug.
Okay. Oh, I was hoping your speeches would go a lot longer, you guys that took birthdays, so that it wouldn't take so long. Vicky Alcoholic.
Hi, Vicky.
Wow. I want to welcome you all. I don't want to say especially the newcomer, because you're all important to me, and you're all important to my recovery. You've all contributed. And I need everybody in this room, not just the newcomer. I need the people that have time and the people that have a little bit of time and teach me a lot, and I listen to everything that you say. So a little about me. I was born in Bakersfield a long, long time ago on a stormy day. And it was a long time ago, really. And I lived in Oildale, so the jokes can go, the Bakersfield jokes can go, it's okay. I do have my teeth. I got out of there before, that, and I wasn't pregnant before I got married either. All those things did not happen, not that that matters, that's not that important, but none of those things happened to me. My life as a child was it was a lot of turmoil. My mother was on her second marriage. She already had one boy that was my older brother, 6 years older than me. And then when she married my father, and when I was about two, my father was, him and an uncle were arrested for breaking and entering, and he went to prison for a few years. During that time, my mother got a little lonely and decided to make my sister, and which we didn't find out until my sister was in her 40s. We didn't know about it. My mother kept that secret for that long. My dad knew, and he said he would keep her and he'd raise her as long as nobody ever knew. And he did, and my sister was really mad when she found out, I can tell you, because by then her father had passed away and she didn't have a chance to get to know him. With my father, I wish I hadn't known him, but my parents divorced when I was in the fifth grade. My mother, she had my sister, and then later had a younger brother. I have a younger brother who's 7 years younger than me, and my sister's 2 years younger, younger than me. My parents drank a lot. I don't really remember a lot of my childhood. It was pretty traumatic, and I just do remember that they drank. And I was told that my father used to beat me, and I finally figured out that the reason he beat me was afraid to beat my sister, because then he'd be beating someone that wasn't really his, and it would make my mom mad. So I was the one that got the brunt of his demons or his madness, I don't know what you want to call it. But I was also molested by my older brother. It started when I was about two. I have an early memory of it, about two. And the reason I remember it is because I must have been potty trained fairly early, and we slept in the same room, and my older brother wet the bed. So he would change beds with me. So in the morning, he knew I wouldn't get in trouble. I was just a little girl. So he would be the one that had wet the bed, but he wouldn't get in trouble because I was the one that was in the wet bed. So, but I never got in trouble for it. But that is when I remember it starting. And it continued till I was 12. My parents did get divorced when I was in the fifth grade. They tried a couple of times to get back together, but it just never worked out. And so my mom had four kids to raise, and my father did not pay child support. I don't know why my mother didn't pursue it or push it. I have absolutely no idea. She just didn't. And so we lived on a cocktail waitress's salary, and she lived basically on tips. So you can... gives you an idea of what my life was like monetarily. And we were always alone. My mom worked nights and she slept during the day, so we were always alone. So that gave the rest of my life access, you know, to the things that happened. My grandfather was also a pedophile. I don't remember ever being abused by him, but my sister said she was, and when she called me and about it, and when she was in her 40s, after she found out about her dad, she called me about my grandfather, and because we were going to a family reunion, and my grandmother was going to be there. She was in her 80s at the time, and she said, I just want you to know why I'm going to be cold to Grandma, because I've remembered all this thing that things that happened when I was a kid, and I don't want to have anything to do her because I do with her because I feel that she let it happen. Because I guess that I'd had an older cousin that my grandfather had molested, and my grandmother talked them out of doing anything. She says, well, you know, I have all these kids. She had 11 kids. So she said, I have all these kids. You can't send them to prison. What will I do? And so they never reported him. So that gave him time later on to go ahead and molest a lot of the other female cousins. And that's one thing that I was always bitter about with my mother, is because when things would get tough, out of the four kids, she would send me and my sister to my grandparents' house. And I later on asked her why she sent the girls and not the boys. She said, well, I thought it'd be easier for you guys, and the boys would be easier for me, and my brother Robbie was the baby, and she didn't want to leave him alone. So we always felt that she played favorites with the boys. She liked the boys better than us. And here she sends us, knowing what my grandfather is, she would send us to my grandfather's more than, I mean, I it seems like I was there a lot, even up till the fourth grade. I remember going up there and living there, and they lived in outside of Salem in a little town called Turner, and I remember the snow and the school bus and having to go to school there because we would change up to living up there during the school year. I that's something that I still have had a hard time forgetting about. I mean, I've forgiven my mother. We don't talk about it. It's something we just don't talk about. It's like it's a non-subject. Whenever she mentions my older brother, I just change the subject to something else because I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to make her feel bad because of the things that happened, and I just change the subject. But anyway, my mother remarried when I was in the eighth grade, and my stepfather drank a lot. But he was fun. He was fun to be around. He was a happy guy, and I was happy when they got married. I called him Dad, and he lived until he was 81, and he passed away last October. And I was really happy that he was my father. At that time, once my mother married him, my father stopped having any kind of contact with us, and the last time I saw my birth father, my son was one, and my son is turning 40 on the 6th, so that's how long it's been, and he's never met my daughter, and he hasn't had any desire to, and hasn't made any attempt to see us. So I've got the abandonment issues, you know, the father didn't want me, and my mother didn't care about me, and I had all those issues, and it's made me forget my childhood. I don't remember being a kid, really. I remember this one, I thought about this the other day, popped in my head. I remember this one time in grammar school. I thought I was a nice kid, you know. I didn't ever get in trouble. I never went to the principal's office. I got decent grades. I tried to stay under the radar and not be too good so I'd be noticed, not be too bad so I'd be noticed that way either. But I had a friend, and I don't remember her name, but her father was in prison, and she was going one day to visit her father, and her mother took her to get her hair done. And back then, the beehive hairdos were kind of in fashion, and she came to school the day after she visited her father, and I swear her hair looked like the Simpson lady. You know, it was just this tall thing. And I didn't laugh at her or anything, but a while later, I told her, I said, you had the most ridiculous hair. And that's the, probably one of the first times I stuck my foot in my mouth, because I lost a friend. She wouldn't talk to me after that. But, you know, kids say the darndest things, and I didn't think I was being hurtful. I thought I was being helpful. Like, the next time you go see your dad, don't do that hairdo. But, once my mother got married, she stopped working as a cocktail waitress. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. She, my mother also drank screwdrivers all the time. I never remember my mother without a screwdriver in hand. And it was the kind with vodka and orange juice, not the kind you use to fix something. And she would drive with it in a coffee cup, always. Just always had the drink in her hand. Didn't go anywhere without it. And she told me once that the bartender told her, "Shirley, do you realize you've had 13 drinks?" Because customers would buy her drinks, and she didn't pay any attention to how much she was drinking. And they said, "You realize you've had 13 drinks?" And she said, "Well, no." And he says, "Well, that's, you might want to slow down a little bit. That's kind of a sign of something." And she never considered herself an alcoholic, though. She really didn't. And it wasn't long after that she started having stomach problems, and she did stop drinking. But my father, stepfather, he kept drinking. And when I was, right after they got married, we moved over to Grover Beach, moved from Bakersfield. That's how I got out of there and didn't have to stay over there. And I'm really glad I got out. I've been over there a few times, and you go through Oildale, and it's a scary place, you know. It's worse than the Northwest here. It's horrible. And I wouldn't want to. We used to walk to the swimming pool, and now I wouldn't walk across the street for nothing there. I hate to even drive there. It's really scary. So anyway, we moved to the beach when I was in right after eighth grade. So I went to high school at Aurora Grande High School. And by then, my older brother had gone into the Army. Oh, let me backtrack a little bit. Before my mother got married, we were discovered what was going on. And both of us were sat down separately and grilled about what happened. And you'd think that I was not the victim. I was also the person that initiated it, I guess, in their mind. And I was treated the same way that he was. And what they did do was send him away to my grandparents' house for about 6 months. And when he came back, I remember them sitting me down and said, "He's coming home." And they look at me and they said, "But that better never happen again." And I said, "Well, you don't have to worry. It won't. You know, it wasn't me anyway." But I always felt like I was to blame as much as he was. And that's something that I have never been able to talk to my mom about, to say, why was I to blame when this started when I was two? How am I at fault when something started when I was a little, really little girl? I still don't understand that, but I can't bring myself to ask her about it because I know how much it will upset her. She's 81, and I just don't want to do that to her, so I can't. I just got over it. I mean, I was just stuck it back in my head and in the very back of my brain, but that affected my whole life, affected who I loved and who I liked and how I acted, how many friends I had, how outgoing I was. It affected, once I got married, affected every single part of my marriage, from emotionally, sexually. Any way that you can think of, it affected my marriage. But that gets a little bit ahead of it. But I loved living at the beach. We would, my best friend in high school lived in Shell Beach, and I lived on 6th Street in Grover Beach. So we would walk halfway and meet in Pismo. And back then, which there isn't now, there was a roller rink. And if you go there now, you can go in some of the shops and look at the floor, and you can see the grooves in the wooden floor. And that was the roller rink, and that's where we would go skating at. And met all kinds of guys from out of town. It was a lot of fun. My best friend met her husband there. He was a football player at Santa Maria High School, and we went to Rio Grande, and it was a lot of fun. But I didn't have a lot of friends. I just didn't know how to make friends. I really didn't date in high school. I didn't know how to do that. I had a couple of dates, you know, go to proms or formal dances or whatever it happened to be. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to talk to men whatsoever. I just couldn't do it. I don't have that problem anymore. But that's another story. I'll get to that. So I only had a few female friends, a few close friends. And right after my junior year, when it was the beginning of my senior year, my parents bought some property out in Tippisgay. I don't know how many of you know where Tippisgay is. It's out. If you go out Bedarabia and keep going and keep going and keep going, you will run into Tippisgay. And we lived out there on a mile off the road, on a dirt road. And they moved the November of my senior year. And so I went ahead and changed schools, because I figured if I didn't change schools, I thought about staying in Aurora Grande and living with friends. But I knew if I did that, I would not know a soul. And I'd be 20 miles out of town and be stuck there and not know anybody. So I decided I would go ahead and move. But I hated Rigetti. I can tell you, I just hated Rigetti. And I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how to make friends. I only had, my sister was 2 years behind me in school, and she made friends easily and just didn't have that problem. But so what I did is I had enough credits from Aurora Grande High School, and I graduated in January. I went ahead and graduated in June on stage, but I got out of school in January and went and took some classes at Hancock and got a job, and because I just really didn't like going to school there. It also was a long bus ride. I mean, we had to be down at the bus stop at 6:30 in the morning to be able to get it to school by 8 o'clock. Because it would go out through Tippisgay, go the back way to Sisquoc, and all the way around, and finally get to Rigetti. And I hated that hour and a half. But you always got your homework done, because you had plenty of time on the bus riding home. It was no problem getting your homework done. But I also, I was telling my mom this story the other day. My mom's visiting, and I was telling her this story that we had a lady that lived down the road from us named Shirley Weber. She was a witch. She really was a witch, but not a nice person. But she decided she was going to teach me how to bake. And she said my mom didn't know how to bake, but she was going to teach me how to bake. So I was at her house one time, and we're baking a pie. And she said, "Your sister is so pretty. She's not going to have any problem catching a man. And it's a good thing you can bake." So it was, you know, I have this in my head my whole, you know, life after that. It's like, okay, it's a good thing I can bake. It's a good thing I can cook, because I'll be able to catch a man, but my sister won't have any problem. And my sister did have more dates than me, I can tell you that. My sister did a lot more things than I did, too, and that probably helped her dating. I was a little shy. Yeah, I was a little lacking there. Well, I don't know. I waited a lot longer than she did, I'll say. I did finally, I met my husband. He worked at Williams Brothers. I don't know how many of you remember Williams Brothers, or how many of you are old enough to remember Williams Brothers. There was a store where Osh is right now, Osh and Michaels. There was a store there, and that's where he worked, and that's where I met him. And we got together on 4th of July of 1976. And I moved in with him in September of 1976. And I didn't tell my parents what I was doing. I knew they wouldn't approve of me moving in. I was only 18. And so I waited till they were gone. They went camping to Pismo for a week. And I waited till they were gone. And then I packed my stuff and I moved in with him. I left him a long letter because I knew my dad was just going to have a fit. And I told him, don't worry, he will marry me. I promise he'll marry me. I won't be, you know, living in sin. I promise he'll marry me. But when they got back, they sent my sister home to check on me to make sure everything was still okay. You know, I hadn't burned down the house or anything because I had stayed home alone. And she found my letter and she took it back. So they went back home. And it took my dad about a week to call me. He was he's a very, very stubborn man. And I knew he was going to be very mad. And Tom was scared to meet him. He had already met him, and he was afraid to go see him because he was afraid he was going to get beat up, you know, for living with his daughter. But he waited about a week, and then he called us and invited us to a barbecue, and he got over it. He didn't have a choice. You know, it's either get over it or don't see me. And he'd rather see me and get over it. But he didn't get over things easily, but he did manage to get over it. And I do want to tell once I had a story about my dad. I told you he drank a lot. And we would go to parties on the weekend, my sister and I. She didn't, when I had my license, I would drive. And we would go to the Los Alamos Men's Club. I don't know how many of you know remember that place? Yeah. And the teenagers could party there on the weekends, on Saturday night. They had dances, and we would drink in the parking lot. Nobody bugged us. Police didn't come by. They didn't care. And then we would drive the back roads back out there. And I can't tell you how many times I drove drunk. I don't know. I think I can drive that road with my eyes closed. That must be what it is, because I drove it so many times. But there was, on the way up to our house, there was an old broken down car. Well, we, being thrifty, would hide our alcohol in there. You know, we didn't want it to be found, so we would hide our alcohol in this old car. And after I moved away, one of the boys from down below they were digging around in that old car and found the alcohol. And my mom said, oh, it must have been their older brother that did it. She never believed it was us. But we came home from my house after going to a party, and we had been drinking, and we were late. They didn't notice that we'd been drinking, but what we got in trouble for was breaking curfew. And we didn't get spanked or anything like that. My dad, we were too big, and he wouldn't have spanked us anyway. But he had his own ways of punishing us. So he decided that the next day that the porch needed to be painted. So he gave us white paint to paint the porch. So we're out there painting the porch, and he's standing with his cocktail in the kitchen window saying, okay, pick up the brush, put it in the paint, stroke, stroke, over and over and over again while we were painting, driving us bananas. Well, as soon as it dried, he decided he didn't like it. He made us paint it red. So we were out there all day long painting that darn porch. But he was at that window the whole time watching us, making sure we did a good job. And it was I had that stuck in my head forever. Pick up the brush, dip it in the paint, and stroke, stroke. Drive me nuts. I hate to paint to this day. You know, I really hate to paint. I'll do it if you make me. Well, not anymore. Now I'll hire somebody. I just won't do it anymore. But but that was my dad's way of punishing us, you know. He would come up creatively of things for us to do. Move a dirt pile or whatever it was, and he would be out there with his drink, always a drink in his hand. And he drank scotch, and that was his way of punishing us. But anyway, I got married when I was 18. Was I 18 or 19? Well, anyway, we got married on December 26th of 1976. And then the following year, on December 6th of 1977, I had my first child, my son, Ben. And 2 years later, in 1979, on Halloween, I had my daughter. And then we decided that's all we wanted was the two kids. And life was pretty good when I was first married. I didn't know how to be with someone, you know. The first person I ever had sex with was Tom. I didn't, you know, it was really a learning experience, to say the least. But, you know, I didn't know how to be married. I didn't know how to be a mother. My mother had never been a mother to us because she was always working or she was drinking. And so I had to do it, you know, you read books or you just trial and error and you hope that that your children come out okay. But I didn't drink then. I drank when I was high school on the weekends, but I didn't drink when I got married. I just didn't like the taste of beer. I didn't like the taste of alcohol, nothing. But we would go out to my parents' house on the weekends and have barbecues, especially once the kids were born. My parents were crazy about my son when he was born. They couldn't wait to have a grandchild. And he was 2 weeks old, and my dad went and bought me a breast pump so that I could get milk out so that he could watch the baby. He wanted, and they, after that, they kept him almost every single weekend through the time he was about five. He loved it out there. But, you know, things went on pretty good. I got a job at Coca-Cola in 1983, once my kids were a little bit older and were going to kindergarten and in first grade. I still wasn't drinking much. I didn't like it. We would go to the beach, and Tom, my ex-husband, he would try and find something for me to drink because he would want to drink at the beach, and he wanted me to have something too. And finally, he found these California coolers. Those of you that are older remember the California coolers. It was a malt beverage, but it was kind of citrusy, kind of a cross between a beer and a squirt, something like that. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. But I did like those, so he would buy me those, and I'd drink one, and then I was done. I did not like to drink. But we did have parties on the weekends, and some pretty good parties, as when the kids were a little bit older, and we had theme parties. We had a Western party. We had a 50s party. What else did we have? I remember wearing is it a Roman where you wear the sheet around your body, you know? Yeah, toga party. We had a toga party. Toga, right. I remember wearing a sheet. That's what I remember is wearing a sheet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Not over my head. But we did like parties, and once, you know, as we got older, I did start to drink a little bit more on the weekends, but I still didn't drink during the week. I raised my kids and the best I knew how, and they didn't really see me drinking a lot except for occasionally on the weekends. But by the time they were in high school, my drinking was accelerating quite a bit. I was kind of unhappy being married. I really got married too early because I didn't know how to be married. I didn't know anything about getting along with somebody and what you do when things are bad and how you suffer through that. And I just didn't really know what to do. But we still managed to stay married a long time. And I lost my job in 2011. That was a long, I was trying to think, 2011. My job, I worked at Coca-Cola for 28 years, and then my job was eliminated. And I had been told so many times, every time Coke would merge with another company, there was always mergers. We were always owned by somebody else, and every time it would merge, somebody would get eliminated, and they were always coming through with the axe and getting rid of people. They'd call it Black Friday because they'd have pink notices in with their checks. And they kept telling me, "Oh, but you're safe. You know, they need you. You're safe. You're safe." Well, nobody is safe in a big company, especially when you merge with a big company. Then they come in and they get rid of what they think that they don't need. They decided that if your branch sells this many millions cases, you get this many people. If you sell this many million cases, you get this many people. And our branch didn't deserve to have a finance manager, which is what I was. So they told me on January 2nd of 2011, but I had to work until July 15th in order to get my package. So they I had a really hard time with that, going to work every single day, knowing that the day was, I was counting down the days because I was going to be out of a job. And I drank more and more and more. That was a really hard time for me. I started to drink in the morning before I went to work. I would sneak alcohol into work. I would go out to lunch with the guys, and we would all drink, and I would be drunk when I would go back to work. But then I'd close my office door. You spray, you take your perfume, you spray your perfume on, you chew some gum, you think nobody can smell it. Nobody ever said anything, so I assumed nobody ever knew. But I just, that was a really tough time for me. And I, by then my kids were both gone, and I really, you know, had nothing else to do but drink. Especially once I lost my job on July 15th, I did not have anything to do. I would clean house in the morning, and I'd go out and pull some weeds in the garden, and then I'd sit and look at the clock, and was, you know, when's the husband going to be home so I have somebody to talk to? And I finally decided I would start going to the bar that he went to, which was the Coachman. And I don't know how many of you, well, I'm sure some of you remember the Coachman. It's not exactly the Hilton or Santa Maria. And I don't, of course, I don't go to Santa Maria Inn either. I'm not sure how that is. But it's, I hung out on the bar stool. And then I would go home before my husband got home from work. And then I would make dinner, and we'd talk for a little while. And then he'd feel sorry for me because I was home all day by myself. So he'd take me to the bar. And, you know, it just I just drank more and more and more. Finally, I drank myself into thinking that I really didn't want to be married anymore. Mm-hmm. And that the grass was definitely greener on the other side. So in March of 2012, we separated. And we got divorced. Well, he served me with papers in May, and our divorce was final in December 1st of 2012. And I was married. If we'd stayed married till the 26th of December, it would have been 37 years. So it was a long time. It was a lot to throw away. And I lose my house, and, you know, the kids are grown with their kids of their own, and I'm left now without the house to do anything to and without a husband to talk to. And so I bought a mobile home in Casa Grande, and I decided I wanted a roommate. So I talked to Larry, the bartender at the Coachman, and he needed a place to go. So I had a bartender for a roommate, and I have a bar in my house. So it worked out really well. That's the reason I bought the house, was for the bar. Now there's no alcohol on it, but it was great back then. It has glass shelves, and I would buy the nice big bottles of everything and then try and find the little cute bottles of the same alcohol and have it sitting next to it. And it really looked good. I loved it. But I, too, like my father, I was a scotch drinker. And I was picky about my scotch. I had one brand. It was not an expensive brand. It was Clooney. That's what I like to drink. And they finally stopped carrying it here in Santa Maria. And the only place that carried it was Dino's Liquor. And then the bars in town would carry it because they knew I wasn't going to drink unless they carried the scotch that I wanted to drink. So I would go into Dino's Liquors and buy it. And also Lance, the owner of the Coachman, would buy me a case. He would order extra case for me, so I would get it there. And that's where my scotch came from. And if I didn't have scotch to drink, I would occasionally drink a vodka with club soda and a lime. That was about it, and an occasional glass of wine. That was really it. I just really liked scotch. But then I got a boyfriend. And, well, the boyfriend that had the grass on the greener turned into really a big pile of weeds. And it was real quick, too. So he didn't I gave up a lot for that weed. But, you know, I didn't smoke it. Not that kind of weed. But I met this man at the bar, of course. Where else do I meet men? It's at the bar. And took him home that night, and then he stayed for a while. And we were great drinking partners. We'd drink at my house and drink. And he was an alcoholic too, but he drank beer. But he would get up in the middle of the night and get a beer and wake me up and ask me if I wanted a drink. I'm like, okay, it's 2 a.m. Sure, I'll have a drink with you. Well, he comes back to the bedroom with 2 drinks. He says, at this house, it's a 2-drink minimum. So you have 2 drinks at 2 o'clock in the morning instead of just one. So I was drunk 24 hours a day. All the time. I didn't have hangovers because I was always drunk. So it also turned out that he was 13 years younger than me, which I don't know that I would have got involved with him if I'd known he was quite that much younger than me, but it worked out really well. I won't tell all the reasons. I don't kiss and tell. But all right, you guys have these things popping in my head now. You're making me not be able to concentrate. Well, it's getting warm in here. In April of 2013, he wanted to go to the bar, and he wanted me to go with him. And I had my granddaughter over at the house, and I said, well, I can't go. I have Charlie, my oldest granddaughter. I said, I can't go. And he said, well, I want you to come out here and talk to me. And I said, no, I'm in here with Charlie. I'm not coming out of this room. If you want to go to the bar, go to the bar. And he was mad, and he went to the bar. And I got a call at about 2 o'clock in the morning from Marion Hospital that he had been in a fight and fell and hit his head. And the doctor says he has a concussion, but it's a light concussion. It's okay. He'll be fine, but we're going to keep him overnight. Well, about 9 o'clock in the morning, he shows up at the house. And I said, you're supposed to be in the hospital. What's up with you? And he says, I just have a headache. I'm fine. And so my granddaughter went home. And later that night, he had one beer all day long. I remember that. Later that night, he had a seizure. Whether it was from the withdrawals of the alcohol, because I know that's a possibility, or whether it was from the head injury, I don't know. Nobody can tell. But I called the ambulance, and they came, and they ended up taking him to Cottage Hospital. And he stayed at Cottage Hospital for a week and went through, he was in a coma, and went through withdrawals. And that is the ugliest thing anybody will ever see, is somebody going through withdrawals in a coma, because he can't talk, he can't say anything, he can't tell he's in pain, but he's pulling on these. He was a strong guy, really strong guy. He's a carpenter, and they had to keep tightening the restraints because he kept ripping out his IVs. But he stayed that way for a week, and then he woke up, and then he was like a horny 16-year-old. I swear, he was terrible. I would just, and we were in the hospital, and I kept saying, "Get back in your bed, the rooms in Cottage Hospital had a fold-out couch so I could sleep and spend the night with him." And he kept coming over there and like, "Get back in your own bed, ding child." But he also was very confused. He thought he was at my house. He kept saying, "Let's go in the other room, watch TV, or let's go in the kitchen and do this." And then he wanted to go to Elko, Nevada and visit his sister. And he says, "It'll only take 2 hours. We'll be there in 2 hours." And he had no concept of where he was and what was wrong with him, and that he was even in the hospital. And then I left, and this was after 2 weeks. I left, and I had to come back home. I had to do some things. And while I was here, the nurse called me, and she said, "You need to come back. We can't control him." I said, "Well, what is he doing?" She said, "He's in the hallway doing headstands and cartwheels." I told you he was acting like a little kid. So I said, put him on the phone, and I said, "Clint, what are you doing?" And he says, "I don't know what their problem is. I'm at the circus, and I'm looking for an elephant." So later that night, they went in his room and found him non-responsive. And whether it's from the headstands, the cartwheels, whatever, something broke loose in his head. And he lasted another week, and on May 8th, he passed away. In 2013, and I went crazy for 15 days. I don't know what I did. I have little bits and pieces of memory, but not strong memories, just little bits. My daughter thinks I had a nervous breakdown. I don't know. I know I drank a lot. And I asked people at the bar later, what happened? What did I do? And they said, oh, you just acted normal, just like yourself. And okay, I guess I can be comatose practically and still act normal. But finally, on about May 22nd, I believe, I woke up out of it. And I called my daughter and I said, I can't do this anymore. And she called some people that she knew in AA. And two women came to my house. One of them is Pam, if you know Pam, and one of them is Heidi. And I could not tell you a darn thing that they said to me. I don't know. But it convinced me that there was a way to get help and stop living the way that I was living. So the next day, I went to Cottage Hospital and spent 5 days in Cottage Hospital and then went to their rehab, CCR, and spent the rest of the 28 days there. So I spent 23 days there. And to say it was easy to stop drinking, I didn't have withdrawals because they gave me Ativan in the hospital. So I didn't ever, they were worried I would have seizures. So the first two nights I had to sleep in this cold, cold room next to an ice maker where it just kept making noise because they have to watch you and check on you constantly to make sure you're not going to have a seizure. But I didn't have seizures and I was able to get through the withdrawals. And after that, I never wanted to have a drink. I was still in a fog, but I didn't want to have a drink. And I liked it there at CCR, and my daughter wanted me to go to a sober living after that, and I in Santa Barbara, and I said, but what am I going to do when I'm not at the sober living? I'm going to find a bar. I said, I may as well go home. There's bars at home if I really want to do that. So I ended up coming home, told my roommate that he couldn't have alcohol in the house, and so he went ahead and he agreed with me, and there wasn't any alcohol at home. And I finally came to an AA meeting when I already had my 30 days. So I never had to raise my hand in here. I raised my hand at some of the Gucci meeting and at the vets, and they don't make you say your name. You just raise your hand and all in a group, and you don't have to say, hi, my name is Vicky, I'm an alcoholic. So I was never too worried about that. I was never the newcomer, like, you know, you guys are here sometimes. But it took me about 6 months here to come out of my fog. But while I was in that fog, I listened and it sunk in what you guys were saying. And I found a relationship with God that I never, ever imagined I could possibly have. Growing up, we didn't go to church. The only God in our house was God damn. When I was married, my husband was raised Catholic and he went to parochial schools his whole life, and he was done with church, so we didn't go to church. You know, he had a big family Bible and we used it as a doorstop. We just, you know, that there just wasn't that room. And I didn't miss it when I was growing up, and I didn't miss it when I was married because I never had it, so I didn't know what I was missing. But I've come to believe that that is what I was missing my whole life, was a faith that I needed and that I have now that gets stronger every single day. I've met amazing people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And even my mother never thought I was an alcoholic. She told me, she told me once that I was the soberest alcoholic she ever knew, or soberest drunk. I could drink a lot and still act sober. So she never really thought I was drunk, but it took her a lot to realize that I was an alcoholic. But both her and my father did realize it. And I was sober for 3 years when my father passed away. So he got to see me sober. I come to a lot of meetings. We come to 20 plus meetings a week, Kristen and I. I met Kristen when was it? Was it 2013? It was the end of 2013, I think. Yeah, after November. And I had had surgery on my hand, and I couldn't drive. And she came over and got me and drove me. So we met, and the rest is history, you know. Best friends. And couldn't get along without her. She couldn't get along with me either, without me. with me.
I know I said that wrong, didn't I?
Yeah, she couldn't get along without me. But AA is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I don't even know how to describe it to the newcomer, because if you haven't had it, you don't know what you're missing. And I was missing it for so long. I was 55 when I came here. I'm 60 now. And I just turned 60. Gosh, that's a hard word to say. But that's why I said I was a long time ago when I was born. But, you know, it takes what it takes. If you're 21, great. If you're, just know that if you're 21, look at all those years you don't have to waste drinking, like I wasted drinking, and not living a good life. I could have lived a lot better life, a different life than I lived. I probably would have stayed married. I'd be married over 40 years right now if I had stayed married, because we would have been able to work out the problems, I think, that we had. But I didn't have enough faith in anything to work it out. My kids are a lot happier. I don't drive around drunk with my grandkids in the car anymore. Sorry, Adam, don't listen. Yeah, they're his children. But I wouldn't even take, we go to lunch, I would not take them to McDonald's because McDonald's didn't serve alcohol. Now we'll go wherever they want. We go to movies, we go to, but they don't like going to McDonald's anymore. Where do we go? We go to to Olive Garden or Red Robin. That's where they like to go, and that's okay. Whatever they want to do. And that's different than what it was when I was drinking. Today, it's not about me. It's about my family and the other people in my life, because they're the important things. Whatever's going on in my life that's bad, and there's some things going on in my life that is pretty bad right this moment, but it's not anything that I would want to pick up a drink over. Because I look back at my life and I see slowly the drinks that I took and how it escalated, and every time I took a drink, I lost something. You know, I lost things, of course, but I lost me. And little pieces of me were lost every single time I picked up a drink. And I've gradually, in the last 4.5 years, gotten me back. And that's something that I can never, ever repay Alcoholics Anonymous for. That's why I believe in service and in unity and recovery. I know that this is a lifetime commitment and that I'll be doing it for the rest of my life. And I'm okay with that. I like coming to meetings. Actually, I like you guys. You know, that's hard to say for, you know, you come into a group of people that have absolutely nothing in common, would probably not even say hello to each other on the street if you met, or in the grocery store, but now we hug each other and we talk about what's going on in our lives and what's wrong and how can we help this, or how can we change things. And that's something I never thought that I could talk to another person about. It's changed, like I said, it's changed my kids' life. I have a relationship with them that I didn't have before. My kids are still, I think, a little nervous that I might drink. I went to my son's 40th birthday party last night, and there was over 100 people there, and they had a band, and he drinks, so the beer is flowing. I mean, all around me, the beer is flowing, but I had no desire what to drink. To drink a beer. They had a jug of iced tea, and I'd go over and I'd pour my iced tea. And it was a fun party. It was really a good party, but I didn't want to drink. And that's when I go places where there's alcohol, I don't want to drink today. I have too much to lose. It's just something that if you've almost lost it, then you know how precious it is. And or if you have lost it and you've gotten it back, you know that you don't want to lose it again. And I don't want to lose it again. And my granddaughter, the oldest, still remembers. And she gets afraid. She is fearful sometimes that I'll pick up a drink. And I tell her, I'm not going to pick up a drink, because she'll be worried if somebody in the house is drinking. And I said, don't worry, I'm not going to pick up a drink. But that's how my life is today. My life revolves around AA. And the last couple of weeks, we've done some fun things. A group of us went to lunch, and then we went to the movies. And then last weekend, a bigger group of us went to breakfast and went bowling. It was fun. I was sore as, oh my gosh, I'm too old for this. The next day I thought, oh my gosh, it was horrible. But it was so much fun. And the pictures, if any of you are on Facebook and saw the pictures, they were hilarious. It was just so much fun. And I think our next thing, which probably won't be till January, is we're going to do something and go up to Hot Shots in Pismo and play pool. So anybody that wants to go, I'll put it on Facebook and we'll play pool. So I'm almost done here. I know I wouldn't, as Kristen said, I wouldn't be able to get past 8 o'clock. And I really left a lot out. But if you want to know, ask me later. So I wanted to read a little bit because this is one of my favorite chapters of the book. I read the book all the time and I like a lot of it. But The Keys to the Kingdom really is has stuff in it that I can really, really relate to. So I'm going to read that and then finish up. There's no more aloneness with that awful ache, so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. The ache is gone and need never return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we've been given to the keys of the kingdom. And I want to thank you all for giving me the keys of the kingdom, because I wouldn't have it if it wasn't for everybody here. So thank you.
All right, let's give Vicki another hand. Thank you.